Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 Years of Radio, 100 Years of Hitmakers, where we celebrate a century of country radio hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hey, this is Brian Ives. I'm the managing editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with country's biggest songwriters. We're digging deep, talking about some of their greatest songs. You may not know their names, but you definitely know their hits. This week, we're talking to Jesse Jo Dillon. Her Instagram bio says that she's the saddest and the baddest, but not all of her songs are sad. For example, she recently co-wrote Dan and Shay's 10,000 Hours, great love song. She's also co-written a bunch of Maren Morris classics, including Rich and To Hell and Back, as well as Cole Swindell's Break Up in the End. That one is kind of sad. She also co-wrote George Strait's The Breath You Take with her dad, Dean Dillon. Interesting fact, right before this interview, Dean Dillon was announced as a new member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, and I think Jesse Jo may follow. You guys are gonna love her. Let's get into it.
It's been 10,000 hours and 10,000 more.
Talk about writing 10,000 hours.
Wow, so 10,000 hours, you know, it was a normal kind of music row day. I went to Jordan Reynolds' house, who is my co-writer on it, and the guys were over, Dan and Shay were there. And, you know, it was a funny day because Dan had the title 10,000 Hours, and he liked the way it looked. And we just started talking, obviously, about, you know, the adage of you've mastered something if you've done it for 10,000 hours and how, it, you know, it could be a cool love song. And I remember that day that I was under the deep impression, keep it simple, stupid. I was just like, this needs to be a simple song. It's a good love song. Let's roll with it. And so we wrote the song. We all loved it. And I didn't really hear much about it for a while until I was in New York at the same time as the guys were. And Dan had reached out to me and said, I've got to see you. We're in New York too. And then, so we ended up meeting up and that, and he was like, I want to play you 10,000 hours. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? You guys recorded this? And he said, yeah. And Justin Bieber's on it. And I was like, no way. No, he's not. And he's like, no, I'm serious. And so, and then he dropped the headphones on my head and there's Justin Bieber and I cried and it's a magical story. But, yeah, so that's 10,000 hours.
What did you think when you first heard it with Justin Bieber on it?
Oh, Brian, I cried. I mean, it was so surreal to me. I mean, because that's one of the biggest pop stars in the world and I've always loved his voice. He has an incredible vocal. I mean, he could really sing anything and I think we'd all like it. But it was just so, being a country girl who's written mostly country songs, it was just, yeah. I mean, I'm still talking about it now. It just feels very surreal, like I'm talking about someone else.
So let me ask you about one of the first songs I think a lot of people associated with you is Maren Morris's Rich.
Yes, Rich. I love that song so much. Maren and I had been friends and had never written a song together. And we had been drinking one night, and I said, hey, you know, I have this idea that I'm wanting to write called Rich, and I kind of threw it out to her a little bit, and she was like, oh, man, yeah, let's do that. And so we got together with our friend Laura Veltz, who the three of us have other songs together as well that Maren has, her current single we have together, and so we just kind of wrote it. It was a really quick write. We decided we wanted it to be, because Rich lyrically is actually a rather sad song, but we wanted it to feel fun, you know?
Right.
And it was just a really great day of three chicks just hanging out, ping-ponging melodies and lyrics back and forth. And it was one of those magical ones where it fell out in about an hour, 2 hours, and you're like, whoa, how did we just do that?
I mean, when I read the lyrics after hearing the songs, you're right. It's like, it's about, I should not get back together with this guy, but I probably will.
Right. Yes. Because, I mean, Lord knows I've been there, and I know the girls had too. And so where it's just, you know, one of those people, you need to put it down, but you can't stop. And there is a sadness in that. And that's why we wanted to make the production and stuff feel fun, because you're a little, as sad as it is, you're a little bit making fun of yourself somewhat too.
I mean, once you get once you get through it, and in hindsight, I think you could like laugh about it maybe a little bit more.
For sure.
What's it like writing for Maren? Just because she came up as a writer for other people before she started making her own records, right?
Right, she did, and you know, she's very honest about too that, you know, she had has been a performer since she was a little girl, and so she kind of had gotten a little beaten down by that. And so when she moved to Nashville, you know, she just thought, I just want to write songs. But then she kept getting this feedback from people of, man, I love this song, but I don't even know who's going to record it because it's, you sound so great, you know? And, like Rich, for example, almost got recorded by somebody else. And I remember because she was almost done with her record. And I remember telling her, I was like, Maren, I don't want to hear anybody else sing this but you, you know? And she was like, oh, you're right. And because she just has such a signature. I mean, she's fun to talk about because she's as good as everybody thinks she is. Mm. She's an absolute melodic force. That voice out of that little Polly Pocket, I mean, it's just insane. Incredible songwriter. I love writing with Mare, too, because she's brave. I mean, she's not afraid to do something different or sing about something that someone might tell her she shouldn't sing about. And she's always, I always look forward to our creative time together because she inspires me all the time, you know.
I'm sure you won't tell me who the song was almost recorded by, but it's hard for me to imagine anybody else. And you know, when she sings about like when she references Diddy. You have to be of a certain age for that even to make sense or to be believable.
Yes, for sure. It actually was almost recorded by a band, and who knows if they would have ended up doing it, but they liked the song that I think you and I both love, is Little Big Town.
Yeah.
And I actually would have loved to hear Karen sing it, but Maren, it just felt so Maren, like you're saying, kind of with like the lingo and just her swoops of it and different things that I just was like, man, you know, this would be a hard one for me to watch go away from you. So I'm glad it turned out how it did, but I would still love to hear Karen do it too. You know,
I mean, I bet Karen would do it. You know, I love Little Big Town also, but you know, she didn't grow up watching TRL, but you could believe that Maren might have.
Yes, for sure. Exactly that.
So talk about To Hell and Back, which is another big song of yours and Maren's.
Oh man, I love that song. I'm so proud of it. It's out right now. I hope it gets some legs here soon. But that is another one that I remember. It's an older song actually, because me and her and Laura wrote it after her record had come out. Because I remember she had champagne with her because someone had dropped it off to her that day. And so we had some champagne when we were writing Hell and Back. And it was a title Maren had. And it was another one. She wasn't sure what it was about. And so we did a lot of discussing what we thought the subject matter and different things. And somehow it just kind of fell out of all of us like Rich did when we just started going, you know. It was like, someone would sing something, someone would say, oh, you could say this. It was a very easy song, weirdly, to write, because when I listen back to it, there's parts of it that I'm like, man, how did we come up with that? But we did, somehow, because I love everything about that song, from the production to her vocal to the melodies to the lyric.
Write songs to you, or when you're starting to write a song, do you think like, all right, this one is for Maren, and are there songs that you guys have written with her in mind, or even written with her, that she hasn't gotten to yet?
Yes, we have. I have several songs with her she hasn't gotten to yet. You know, and just for writing in general, I think it depends. You know, like if you're sitting down with an artist, you always want to bring it. I'm such an idea person. I love lyrics and I love hooks, and so I always try to bring in hooks that I feel like might be something said artist would be interested in singing about. with Maren, it's easy because I feel like we like singing about the same things. Sometimes you know, as a professional songwriter, you're matched with people that you have to kind of search more for what you think would be their perspective. But, I feel like it always changes depending on, and then when you're just writing with other songwriters, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want. I mean, some days you'll think so-and-so's about to go in the studio. Maybe we could do something for them. I feel like I never have any luck when I do that though. When I try to target something so hard, I don't know if I've ever actually gotten a song recorded. I feel like my best stuff for me is always when I'm writing what feels like the best song in the room that day, whether it's a bop or a ballad or whatever.
Mm. One of your other sad songs is Break Up in the End. And to me, that's like a classic song that I could imagine lots of different people singing it. And I read that people actually turned it down before Cole Swindell took it.
Even if I knew you'd be the one that got
Yes, so Luke Bryan had it for a while and then did not record it. And then actually Dan and Shay really wanted to record the song. Dan, to this day, will text me and sometimes at night and be like, damn it. Just because he's loved that song so much. But Cole was the first person because they're both at the label together, and he put it on hold first, and he's a very old, dear friend, and I think he did a great job with it. I love hearing him do a song like Break Up in the End, and I think it was really, even though he's not a songwriter on it, and this is the beauty of songwriting, that song was very personal to him because he had just gone through a breakup that had quite devastated him.
We break up in the end.
And so I think that, you know, that's the beauty sometimes of professional songwriting, is when the songs find this home that they almost, it takes on this whole other thing because the singer has just bonded with it so much, you know?
Sure, and Dan and Shay could still cover it.
Oh yeah, I know. I would love to hear that actually too.
I mean, I do feel like that's the kind of song that everyone could bring their own thing to, and it would sound great on almost anybody.
Oh gosh, I hope it feels like that kind of song to me. That always feels weird to say about your own work, but I that's another one. I'm just so proud of that song. It was another easy day. I'm sensing a theme here. that I'm going to remind myself of sometimes, like, I don't know if this should be this hard today. But I had that title. I'd had it for a while because I had seen this book called John Dies at the End in the library. And I thought, when I was walking by and saw it, I thought, man, I want to read that. How does he die? And I thought, man, that'd be a great way to write a song where the title just gives it away. Because originally we were calling it, before it was recorded, We Break Up in the End, and then they just took the we off. When I brought that into the guys, I was thinking they're either going to think this is crazy or they're going to like it, and they both loved it, and the rest is history, I guess.
It's totally a great song.
When
you mention, you know, like, okay, Luke Bryan had it on hold. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you when you've written a song, you know, it's sort of in the clutches of a huge artist or their manager?
It's torture.
Yeah. Like how long does that last? How long does the hold last? What goes through your mind?
Oh man. I mean, you always hope it's short because it can be long. I've had songs that have been held for almost a year. You know, I've had songs that have been held more times than I have, to be honest, you know, and they still somehow have managed to not make a record. I feel like holds make you feel good for the first 30 minutes. You're like, heck yes, we have a chance. And then comes in the doubt. Okay. I wonder if so-and-so is going to knock this off the record. I wonder if it'll sound good when they go in to do it. Because I've had to learn in my career. I used to get so upset. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I still didn't sometimes. But when, you know, you've had a song held for a long time and then it doesn't get recorded, I would always take it so personally in the beginning. And I realized through working with more artists as I've gotten older and been in the field longer that sometimes you love a song and you go in to record it and it doesn't sound right. It doesn't fit the record. It doesn't sit in your voice right. you know, and that's okay. It doesn't mean the song is bad. It just unfortunately didn't work, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, like I'm sure Keith Urban gets submitted a lot of songs, and I'm sure if he turned one down and Brad Paisley or Tim McGraw recorded it, he might really love their version. It just was something that he couldn't figure out his way into it or his signature.
Oh, for sure. And I've heard funny stories over the years. I've never gotten to hear them about any of my own songs, unfortunately, but I've heard stories of other people's where so-and-so was supposed to record it, and then this other person ended up doing it, and the artist that almost recorded it has been like, damn it, because the song blows up, you know? And I get that hurt, too, because you're like, dang, I wonder if it would have blown up if I had just cut it. Would it have been big for me, too? But, you know, and then we're all playing a dangerous game there, because who knows, you know? Who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, I could definitely see what you're talking about there. You could definitely drive yourself nuts with what else.
Oh, yes.
That's really funny, though. Talk about, since I mentioned Tim McGraw, Tim McGraw's Here on Earth. Writing a song for a star of that stature must have been really thrilling.
Oh, it's insane. It's another insane one for me. I mean, I fell asleep when I was a little girl every night listening to Tim's Everywhere record. My brothers and I had bedrooms across the hall, and my mom put a boombox in the middle of the hallway and put the little CD. It might have even been a tape. I don't know. And we would just fall asleep listening to it. And Tim has always, his body of work is unparalleled to me. He's one of my favorites. It's like we open our eyes for the very first time. We actually wrote that song at a camp for him. Missy Gallimore, who works with him, does A&R for him, and her husband Byron produces him, set up a camp with some writers to try to target Tim, like we were talking about a couple minutes ago. And I remember that they asked that day, I can't remember what song it was, but they were like, Tim's really loving this song. It was a classic rock, like tempo. Mm. And it was something in, like, he wanted things kind of in that vein. And Chase and John and I sat down, who we wrote Break Up in the End together, and we just all kind of looked at each other and was like, yeah, we kind of don't know how to do that. So we just need to write what a great song today and see what happens, you know. And that was Here on Earth. It was John's idea. Another, once again, a trend. I remember it was a fairly easy day of just great co-writing where nobody's at odds and everybody's on the same page. And it felt like a special song in the moment. Especially, I know it means so much to both of them, but Chase McGill, I mean, when he first heard Tim's version, you know, he sent me a long text and was like, having my daughters now and hearing Tim McGraw sing this song just brings me to tears because it just makes me think of my girls. And I was like, you know, but that's been such a cool, insane thing. I mean, to have the title track and then eventually the tour title, COVID, go away, please. I've never had a song that was a tour title, I don't think. So that was really cool for me. And it's, again, I've got lucky with that song because it's a song I really love. It's like we open.
Every day something comes out to try to divide us. But when we get right down to it, we're all the same.
You see yourself and everybody else.
Who is going to help us if we don't help each other?
We should be walking hand in hand one another. And we should be looking out after each other.
We've learned a lot. We've done a lot. There's still more we need to do and we can't get comfortable.
We'll get there. We'll get to where we need to be.
My name is Cosmo and I am here on Earth.
My name's Heather and I'm here on Earth.
My name is Mario Ponce, and we are here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
I'm Tim McGraw, and we're here on Earth together.
That's awesome. Let me ask you about a different one with Brandy. When I interviewed her, the one line that stood out to me was, "If you want the girl next door, then go next door."
Yes.
That's a pretty solid 1-2 punch right there.
Oh, and that was one that she was the writer that caught that, because I was on the phone with her. I'll never forget. I was standing on my porch. I was dating a guy at the time, and I was livid at him. And I said to her on the phone, I was like, I mean, if he wants the girl next door, he needs to freaking go next door. And she was like, Jesse, you need to come over right now. We need to write that song. And so we called Shane McAnally, who's both of our good friends and amazing songwriter. And we told him the idea, and he was like, can y'all just come over now for sure, for real? And so we did. We just went over to Shane when he used to live in East Nashville, and we wrote that song. I remember that was one that took longer because there were certain, we were deciding so much on very specifically exactly what we wanted to say. So baby, if you want the girl next door, go next door and go right now and don't look back, don't turn around and don't call me when you, like, we had so many options because it was such a fun song to write that it was almost like whittling them down.
I mean, I remember talking to her around that time, and I know she was thinking of bringing a show, not of her writing, to Broadway. But I remember thinking, like, Girl Next Door could be the nucleus of a Broadway show.
Oh my gosh, it totally could. That's actually really brilliant. I'm going to tell her that when we hang up with this. Because I know her and Shane have still, they are actually still working on their musical. That has been a long, long, long year thing. Which, learning from them, I guess musicals are like that. I mean, it's a lot of wasted time if it doesn't succeed, but man, if it does, you have fed your grandkids if you wrote Wicked. You know?
I mean, I know at the time she was hanging out with or asking questions to Sarah Bareilles, you know, obviously was just a, you know, not just, but she had a singer-songwriter career, and yes, she probably put a lot of time into that waitress thing and didn't know if it would work, and yeah, if she has kids and grandkids, she's probably feeding them on that now. But
I know, because I guess the money is just crazy. I've never been involved in that world, but I've gotten to know people that are through Brandy and Shane's journey working on their own. Like Robert Horn is the book writer for the musical they're working on, and he's been monumentally successful as a Broadway writer. I mean, he just wrote the book for Tootsie that was a big hit on Broadway and many other things. And it's just such a... It's similar, but it's so different. It's very interesting.
I mean, if you're writing songs for a show that goes on 8 times a week or whatever it is for like a bunch of months, and then it goes on tour and all that stuff, it's like, I don't know the accounting of it, but it seems like if you hit the jackpot, you've really hit the jackpot.
Oh, for sure. I think that seems to be the theme of, like, if you have a Wicked or a Book of Mormon, specifically what you just said about going on tour.
Yeah,
I do know when a musical is going to do that, you're setting the stage to make a ton of money, I think, if all goes well.
And I hope that happens for Brandy. She deserves it, and she's totally awesome.
I know.
I wanted to ask about the process of writing The Breath You Take for George Strait, because, you know, we were discussing before we were recording your dad getting into the Country Hall of Fame, and I know that's a song you wrote with him, and it sort of has a very parental narrative to it.
He looks up from second base, Dad's up in the stands.
It was one of the first songs I wrote with my dad, strangely enough. I was growing up the daughter of a Hall of Fame songwriter is an interesting road. I do not envy people like Sean Lennon at all, because it's, you're definitely in a shadow, and you're a bit in awe of your parent, and I definitely am still to this day of my dad. And so I was very, like, quiet with him about the fact that I was writing songs, and I remember he was kind of annoyed with me, but he was like, why haven't you been sharing any of this with me?
Trying to win the race, life's not the breath you take, but the moments that take your breath away.
I think I was just nervous, and I remember I'd had a sketch of an idea for the chorus of The Breath You Take, and I called my dad and sang some of it to him, and sang some of the ideas I had, and he was like, similarly to Girl Next Door, because I remember it was a weekday morning. He was like, well, I'm riding with Casey Beathard today. Will you just come over to Sony and let's write the song? And so I did, with two huge juggernauts, because Casey Beathard, you know, Eric, he's written countless things for Eric Church and Kenny Chesney and all kinds of amazing artists. But it was another one that was an easy song because I feel like all of us knew what we wanted it to be. Because sometimes in co-writes, I think sometimes people can be on a different page and sometimes the song can still work out, but then sometimes it doesn't because you can just never really agree, I guess. And so it was just one that it still means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to Casey and my dad. Just, I think we got to kind of say something that we wouldn't have said if it wasn't in a song, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I was going to ask that because it's like the idea of writing with your very well-known songwriter dad and you're writing about fathers and children. You know, I would imagine, especially with certain people, it might be a place where you do say things that don't necessarily come up.
Right. Yes, yeah. For sure.
Wow. And is it hard to write with your father, you know, even forgetting about that? Is it just like, you know, your dad is the boss in your house, but if you're writing a song together, that might not be the best dynamic.
It's weird because, and I, once again, I don't know if it's because DNA, what a crazy thing, but I feel like we're a similar brain songwriting wise. So I really enjoy writing with my dad. Writing with him with another writer is always funny and fun because I can watch the other person, which I have been in rooms with different people, like Tom Douglas. This, I would be this person if I was with Tom Douglas. But I watch them being so in awe of him that they'll kind of, oh yeah, that's it about anything he sings or says. And sometimes I have to be the one and be like, I don't know, Dad. I don't think that's it yet. And you can watch the other person look at me like, what? But, you know, he's not always right. He knows. You know,
that's funny. Are there any other songs that you wanted to discuss that I didn't bring up yet?
I have two songs that came out today on Lindsay L. I'm really proud of her for making what I feel like is a real, you know, she really dug in and I think made a record for herself that is the record she's always wanted to make, if that makes sense. And so I'm very proud of her, and I'm really proud to have songs on there. My songs are called Ready to Love and The Other Side. He did kind of a concept record about her big breakup with old Bobby. And so it's a cool record in that way because it really does go through the stages of grief. I think she did a great job of doing that. I mean, having gone through breakups myself, I mean, man, what different emotions you feel over the course of 6 months or so, if not longer. If you're me, Lord, I'll hang on to anything, but for too long.
And so you mentioned earlier that you would never want to be an artist. Is what is next for you? You have no ambition to make your own record and put yourself out there.
You know, what's funny is that I have always said that. And lately, I think because of COVID, we're all bored sometimes, I guess. I have found myself thinking about that, just making it for myself, really. Because as a professional songwriter, you write so many songs you love that don't ever get recorded and no one ever hears. And I see why the trend that happened a few years ago, I mean, it's still happening, where great songwriters that are also stylists and great singers end up being like, screw it, I'm going to make a record, like Maren Morris or Michael Hardy or Old Dominion, Brandi Clark. I mean, you've seen a lot of great artists come out of Nashville that were originally songwriters because I think they want this music out to get out. And so I found myself sitting a little bit in that, and I've had a few baby conversations with my friend who's a producer songwriter, Aaron Esice, because if I was ever to do something, I think I would want to do it with him because he's so easy for me to be around. And it would just be a full-on exploration. Who knows if I'll ever actually do this, but I have been thinking about it a bit.
Interesting. Well, cool. Thank you so much for talking to us, and I look forward to speaking to you down the road.
I look forward to speaking to you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Jesse Joe Dillon for spending so much time with us, and thank you for listening. Next week, we're talking to Marv Green, who's written a classic love song for Tim McGraw and Faith Hill, and he's also written one of my favorites, Eric Church's Creepin'. See you guys next time.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hitmakers. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.